It's our Halloween show on the Downey's Journal. I'm Jared Brumbaugh. Rain or shine, this weekend, specters will be lurking the streets, cemeteries, and historic homes of downtown New Bern, part of the 22nd annual Ghost Walk. Fort Parson has more.
Throughout its existence of over 300 years, the city of New Bern has been home to many influential figures who have impacted the city's history. To celebrate these individuals and their unique stories, the New Bern Historical Society is holding New Bern's Ghost Walk. Kathy Morrison is a volunteer with the Historical Society and will be participating in the event's festivities.
Ghost Walk brings back to New Bern characters from New Bern's historic past and lets folks see them right in the places where they may have been and where they may have lived.
This nighttime self-guided tour will feature hauntings at a centuries-old cemetery, the Agony Alley at Moore Oliver House, and productions at the Athens and Masonic Theaters. As visitors stroll the Cedar Grove Cemetery by candlelight, they'll encounter five ghosts of historical New Bernians who will share stories of their contribution to the city's history. Volunteer John Baldwin plays Chief Justice Wallace, an advocate of women's suffrage.
You all know that the accomplishment of your goal of universal suffrage is going to be a long one, and it may take several years. So ladies, we must persist and we must persevere in this effort so that we can get our rights to vote.
Many of the apparitions have a message in their performance, whether it's how history played out or practical information that past residents would have needed to know.
Now I want all you folks out there to remember to use your blackout curtains. We can't have that light sneaking through and going to the outside.
This year, Kathy Morrison plays a World War II air raid warden.
It will reveal the position of our coastline. We need all of you to make sure that you follow the codes. They're put in place to help us. To help us keep our city safe.
Many historic homes will be decorated for Halloween and some even open to tour. According to Morrison, half of the stops at this year's event will allow visitors to go inside. At others, the spirits will share their tales from the porch. The event also features live theater entertainment with Dreamgirls of the 60s at the historic Athens Theater. On Hancock Street, the Masonic Theater will present The Time Machine. In addition, a few sites along the way will serve food.
And if you'd like to have something to eat along the way, there are a number of historic churches that are open for tours. Three of the places will have food. St. Cyprian's will have hot dogs, so you can have a good old-fashioned ghostly hot dog. Centenary Methodist Church has pasta in the catacombs with singing monks, and that's a tradition. They've been doing that for several years. And then at the Scottish Rite Temple, they'll have beef brisket.
Altogether, there are 19 different sites you can visit. The New Bern Ghost Walk remains a significant fundraising event for the New Bern Historical Society, bringing in $45,000 to $50,000 each year. Tickets to Ghost Walk are on sale now and can be purchased at a variety of locations, including the Bank of the Arts, Mitchell's Hardware, and the New Bern Historical Society's office on Pollock Street. Ghost Walk is underway daily beginning at 5:30 and continues until 9:30 p.m. through Saturday night. If you'd like more information, go to the ENC events calendar at publicradioeast.org. I'm Ford Parson.
This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. Ghost stories are plentiful in eastern North Carolina, from the legend of the Mako Light near Wilmington to Union soldier apparitions in Onslow County, or the little ghost girl Carrie that can be seen in a pale yellow dress playing in the streets of downtown Washington. This week, we talk to paranormal investigators who gather evidence in an attempt to determine if spirits do, in fact, haunt eastern North Carolina. As you listen to this next story, suspend disbelief and prepare to hear voices from the great beyond. Today we speak with the very much alive Chris Lehman, the lead investigator with the Greenville-based Eastern North Carolina Paranormal. He recalls how his interest in the paranormal began when he saw a ghostly figure that he thought was his mother.
About 2 weeks after my mother passed away, I was sitting in the chair that she always sat in, and I heard her rapping at our screen window, like somebody scratching at it. And I turned over for a brief second, and I saw like a bust of my mother. The color was very vague, you could barely make out color. I turned back to the TV, had to do a double take, and by the time I looked back, the bust was gone.
Since his first experience, Lehman has been searching for answers. That drove him to start the nonprofit Paranormal Investigation Service in June. Matt Abel, an Eastern North Carolina paranormal investigator, became interested in ghosts as a teenager.
It's actually part of really my senior project at J.H. Rose in Greenville. And I knew I wanted to do my paper on local legends, urban legends, folklore. Big fan of that. And try to figure out what a physical project would be for that. And it eventually led to me finding about a paranormal group called Seven Paranormal Research. And got in with them as an intern. And once I got out of college, joined some groups and been into it ever since.
When conducting paranormal investigations, the team will arrive on the scene, talk with the client, and begin their investigation in the dark. And in some cases, the main breaker will be cut for the analysis. Some believe paranormal activity is more active in a dark environment. Also, high levels of electricity can create magnetic fields, which can alter the measurements. Investigators will use video cameras, digital and 35mm cameras, tape recorders, digital audio recorders, K2 meters or electromagnetic force meters, and digital thermometers to gather evidence.
EMF meters' basic function is to detect the level of the EMF field in an area. Now, why would that be important? Well, when you're in the middle of a field or a cemetery, for that matter, where there's no electronics whatsoever and your meter's going crazy, it means, you know, there's at least a form of energy there.
Eastern North Carolina is a hotspot for paranormal investigations, due largely with its involvement with the Civil War. The Oakdale Cemetery in Washington is a resting place to many soldiers who fought in the war between the states. While investigating the graveyard, Lehman describes feeling a cold spot on his back.
We have a little digital thermometer that got a probe, you know, just takes temperature around there. Well, somebody put that right on my back, and the thermometer went all the way down. It fluctuated from 60 degrees all the way down to 30 degrees, and it felt like it was freezing on my back. I was walking around with my recorder asking questions that whole time, and then all of a sudden I just got that cold spot.
Lehman, at the time, was conducting an EVP, or Electronic Voice Phenomenon session. EVPs are electronically captured sounds that resemble human speech, but they're from unknown sources. EVPs can occur in recording tape, in radio station noise, and from other electronic media. Some claim these sounds are of paranormal origin. Eastern North Carolina Paranormal conducts EVP sessions at all the testing sites. Basically, an investigator will ask questions while holding a microphone and listen for an answer. Answers sometimes don't come right away. Abel recounts his experience doing an EVP session at the cemetery.
Apparently, whatever does exist beyond what we can see doesn't like me very much, even though I'm a friendly guy. I was there and had to ask the question, does anyone miss you? And then, you know, we finish our session, we finish our investigation. I get back. I, you know, throw my recorder into my computer. Lo and behold, what's in this little blip on my audio screen says nothing but, shut up. So you can imagine it's kind of unnerving when you get back and realize that was said right around your shoulder.
Even Abel, who by his own admission explains everything with science, had to admit that his experience was eerie.
Most of the time, you can chalk any paranormal experience up and recreate it. There's the rare occasions where you can't, and that it leaves you pretty dumbfounded. That's one where I have to look at and go, okay, that's pretty interesting.
Another paranormal investigation was conducted on an old plantation house in the Nightdale-Raleigh area. Client confidentiality prohibits the investigators to release the name of the property.
That one was pretty interesting for the sole fact that me coming in as a skeptic, never experienced anything, like, you know, senior in high school, I managed to experience more things in my life than I've ever experienced in one location.
Abel says all of the five senses were hit on by paranormal activity at this particular site.
From experiences from the cold spots, to actually smells, to weird phenomena where someone calls your voice out on your two-way radio and it's no one in the group.
After analyzing the room where Abel felt a cold spot, several of the investigators with him smelled cherry pipe tobacco.
And we're trying to figure out, well, who in this group smokes? There's only one person, and they're smoking, like, you know, non-denominational brand cigarettes, you know? So it's definitely not them, and they're outside when they do that. And lo and behold, later in the evening, I actually get a hold of the curator and ask him, like, we smelled this in the place. What was that? And he's like, well, the great-grandfather who lived here was supposed to be one of the spirits that was inhabiting the plantation home actually smoked cherry pipe tobacco.
Abel tells of another experience he had at the plantation home that caused him to run out of the house in fear.
I'm finishing up, you know, 35 millimeter camera without the manual, you know, take the tape out. So I'm having to shoot all the pictures going around as we finish up. Well, when I get to this one spot, and basically imagine like an old plantation home where there's the lounge and then they have the open air dining room, which is right next to it. And there's like a spine in the middle of it that separates the two. Well, I'm taking photos. As soon as I step on that spot, my heart rate jacks to what I think would be what feeling like a heart attack would be. And then I rush off of course, my first investigation, and run the hell out of the room, terrified. Lo and behold, talk to the curator in the night and find out that's where actually the great-grandmother died of a heart attack.
Lehman experienced a similar phenomenon while investigating a haunted house in Goldsboro. The house is located near a historic Civil War battlefield. During an EVP session, a loud crash echoed through the house.
I sat back down, and my chest was pounding. It was hurting. I did a little bit of research, and actually after listening to the recording of that and slowing it down, it sounded like a musket shot. You know, you heard the clip of the primer hitting the ignition ball and then, you know, the shot. And actually, in that particular room, a gentleman was actually shot in that house with a musket.
Another site Eastern North Carolina Paranormal is currently investigating in the Greenville area is a hospital operated by the Union during the Civil War. During the investigation, a two-man team was inside the house while Lehman and other investigators waited outside.
I looked up because I saw a light and it was downstairs, and I was like, is the other team downstairs or upstairs? And they're like, well, the other team's upstairs. So I looked over again and I saw what I thought was a woman dressed in an old nurse's outfit, like a white dress with the, you know, with the hat, and that was interesting.
Lehman and Abel agreed one room in particular stood out to them.
I think everybody who went upstairs felt a really like heaviness on their chest, harder breathing, which, you know, could be something, couldn't be, you know, but from the evidence that we caught in that one particular room, personally, I would say that, you know, that was caused by, you know, something paranormal.
Investigators decided to conduct an EVP session in the paranormal active room. Here's what the microphones picked up.
A voice, and you can tell it's not my voice and it's not Matt's voice, and we're the only two people in the house. It's a voice that says, walk back.
Here's the EVP one more time. While pushing on a closet door in the same room, Lehman and Abel both heard a distinctive female voice saying, please help me. Here's what the recorder picked up. While downstairs in the Civil War hospital, Abel asks the question, is anyone here tonight? The answer he receives is, I don't know. Listen closely.
Is there anyone with us right now?
Once more. Eastern North Carolina Paranormal uses the EVPs and the evidence gathered at each site to determine if the events or experiences reported by a client are the result of natural causes or from other sources. The goal of the group is to offer scientific evidence resulting from the investigation and an understanding of the events that are occurring. If you're interested in investigating paranormal activity, they suggest joining a local group. There are many of them in our area: Eastern North Carolina Paranormal, Ghost Hunters of North Carolina, and Eastern Paranormal, to name a few. I'm Jared Brumbaugh.
If there's something strange in your neighborhood, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
If there's something weird and it don't look good.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. We're moving on towards the end of October, and with that, of course, everyone's thinking about Halloween. But how can Halloween possibly apply to the garden? I could have taken the easy route and just talked about pumpkins. I mean, after all, pumpkins are grown in the garden. They're harvested this time of year. They're absolutely beautiful. They come in every color and texture. You carve them and put candles inside. So much I could have talked about regarding pumpkins, but that's just too easy. So I thought, what's scary in the garden in October? And I realized that for some people, one of the scariest things you can face in the garden right now
is a triple armload of fresh kale that all is ready to be harvested at once. And they don't have any idea how to clean it, prepare it, or cook it. Now that's scary. So what do you do with all the kale that's coming in right now? First of all, don't be scared. You don't have to harvest it all at one time. Just pick the larger leaves around the outside of each plant, leaving the rest of the plant there to grow. Kale will continue to grow throughout the entire winter here on the coast. So you'll be picking kale all winter long if you harvest it this way. If you cut the entire plant off, you're removing the growing tip. And although the kale may try to put some side shoots out from the stub that's left, there really won't be enough there to eat later in the season. So pick the outer leaves. Leave the growing tip for later. But still, you've ended up with a big load of kale. The first thing to keep in mind, when cooked, the kale is going to shrink down to a tiny fraction of its size right now. Bring the kale inside the house and decide how you're going to use it. If you're going to quickly fry it, one of my favorite ways, or even if you're going to boil it in some seasoned water, don't boil it to death in a huge pot of water. Just sort of steam boil it in wonderfully flavored water that you've used, I don't know, maybe a little bacon grease or a ham hock, or if you're trying to be a tiny bit healthier, a smoked turkey leg. If you're going to do it that way, first stack the leaves on top of each other, roll them up, and then cut them in strips, then cut across the strip, and then put the leaves into a big sink full of cold water. Put them in a lot of water, much more than you would think. Swish them around and give a little bit of time for any sand or grit to settle to the bottom of the sink. Then simply lift out the kale leaves that are already cut and prepare them. What if you want to try something really different, like kale chips? In that case, cut the leaves into larger chunks. And then salt them in a big bowl and rub the salt into the leaves to bruise the leaves a little bit. You then want to put them in a single layer on one or two cookie sheets, lots of oil, and then cook them in a low oven until they're dry and crispy. Kale is truly easy to prepare. You can add it to pasta. You can put it in soups. There's hundreds of recipes available online right now. So don't be afraid. Go ahead and choose your kale, either from your garden or from one of your local farm stands. Many are still open on the weekends with all the wonderful greens of fall and winter. And take some into the kitchen and try a new healthy recipe for Halloween. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
This is the Down East Journal. 10 years worth of short stories by a Boone horror writer have been collected under one cover. George Olson has this, which originally aired in May 2009.
Scott Nicholson says he's not a violent man, that he couldn't even kill a chicken. But still,
sometimes you can get cheap revenge in stories that way. I don't know how many former bosses I have killed off in stories.
The Boone-based Nicholson is a horror writer, which gives you all sorts of possibilities to vent a little rage. He's just released a collection of short stories entitled Scattered Ashes that covers a period from 1998 and 2008, a period where he also wrote several novels. It was also a period of personal turmoil, which the writing helped to quell.
I went through a painful divorce. Is there any good divorce? And just struggling with my parenthood and personal issues, and a lot of those stories, I even go into it in the afterword there about these stories kept me sane, and they're also a touchstone of where I was and what I was going through. And not all of it's pretty, but it feels human.
The most personal of those short stories could be Watermelon, which tells the story of Ricky, a man who is constantly berated by his wife, who reads of a domestic murder that no one foresaw. The more Ricky reads, the more similarities he sees in his domestic situation and the fated couple. As the similarities pile up in his head and his wife's verbal assaults continue, the rage in Ricky rises until...
At the time, as my first separation, and I had this little apartment, and I was doing a lot of drinking late at night, and had this watermelon, and for some reason this rage built up, and I was tearing the red stuff out and then started punching it, and it's like, man, I'm glad this isn't a person. And I flung it out the door across the road and watch it sploosh. And then later I was thinking, yeah, that's kind of metaphorical. That could have been a person. I'm just venting my rage on this watermelon and swelled that into a story.
Ricky thrashes a watermelon, just as Scott Nicholson had done earlier. No people, fictional or otherwise, were harmed. It was an incident Scott describes as a little bit embarrassing, but definitely fitting his line, "It's not pretty, but it is human." There's much of the not pretty in his writing, more so than straight horror, which tends to involve monsters that bump in the night according to most people's delineation of the genre. In fact, several of the stories in Scattered Ashes, while they have a ghostly twist, are based on two real situations, where Scott almost seems to be saying that real life for some is horror enough, as in this from The October Girls, about Ellen, the beaten child of a drunken mother, and her imaginary, or quite possibly ghostly, friend Margaret.
Ellen found Margaret beside a church white marker. "Mom's going to be mad," Ellen said. "She's just an old meanie." "She's really going to kill me," Ellen sat in the grass beside Margaret, and dew soaked her dress. "Don't go back," Margaret said. "I have to go back." Margaret folded her arms across her chest and stuck out her lower lip. "In the summer, we got to play until way late." "It's not summer anymore," Ellen said, looking at the sky. Three stars were out. "Is that why the fireflies are gone?" Ellen laughed. "You're such a dummy head." She poked Margaret in the side, feeling the hard ridges of her friend's ribs. It was funny how invisible friends could be solid if you thought of them that way. "Sometimes it's hard to remember," Margaret said, sniffing. "You know, what it was like." Ellen poked again. "It's not that great."
That type of real life is horror enough writing with a ghost story interwoven inside is also found in The Night Is an Ally, which is Scott's imagining of time in the German Reserve Police Battalion 101, a police formation put at the disposal of the German army during World War II. Battalion 101 was responsible for the shooting deaths of 38,000 Jews during a 15-month period.
Sounds like there was a struggle that some people would not go out and kill Jews. And some of them were like, "Hey, it's a chance to get away with murder. I don't like these people anyway. Now I got freedom to kill them and not have any punishment." And just that turning, and where's that point in your mind that clicks and says, "Hey, it's okay to, these people are subhuman." And that just fascinated me. And the whole psychological journey of, did they all really want to kill Jews, or was it a few and who encouraged? And then what does it take to persuade someone to make that shift? It's kind of horrifying, because I think that switch is maybe in all of us, and we just don't know where it is until we get there.
While short stories such as The Night Is an Ally derive most of their horror from real life, Nicholson's Scattered Ashes collection does delve in straight horror. What's a horror novel without a few zombies? And also pays homage to horror past in Last Rites.
I was actually solicited for that project. Edgar Allan Poe left this fragment of a story about a page that was unfinished, and all the writers in this anthology were challenged with finishing that story, and we got a co-author credit with Edgar Allan Poe, which is always cool.
Nicholson even goes so far as to write Poe into the story as a lighthouse keeper whose sanity is on edge with the job's isolation.
"Are you not a lover of the sea?" I said. "I would have thought someone taking a post such as this..." "Must be mad as a hatter," he said, looking glumly into his glass. 4 months here and I've barely even started." "I don't understand," I said. He gestured toward the papers on the table. "My work." "You keep a record of the currents, tides, and ships?" "Not that work. I mean my writing." "You're a writer then?" "Yes, I used to be a newspaper reporter. But I'm driven to write of false things. I thought with the change of scenery and blessed isolation..." "You have plenty of both here, I imagine. I know something of isolation myself." He gave a grim smile, as if his loneliness were the deepest in all the world and weighed most heavily on his shoulders. He drank more liquor in gulps instead of sips and refilled his glass. My legs were trembling from the long climb, but the only place to sit was his bed. I had never been in a man's bed. "Isolation is the devil's tool," Poe said. "I want to concentrate on my work, but one hears things in this damnable cylinder. The rush of high tide sounds like voices in the chamber below, like the soft cries of those who have been pulled under the water. Think of all those ships lying on the ocean floor yonder, and the white bones of those who went down with them. Where do you suppose they go? I'm going off what you read, and just the crazy, demented guy who drank a lot and basically seemed pretty unhappy. And the writing, did the writing make him mad? Did the writing help him deal with his madness? Or was it all just fiction and maybe he was a relatively stable and happy guy? But of course, it makes for a much better story if he's crazy.
In Scott Nicholson's case, the writing and the occasional watermelon thrashing seem to have kept him in check. Scattered Ashes, a collection of short stories by Boone author Scott Nicholson, is published by Dark Regions Press. I'm George Olson.
Thanks for listening to the Down East Journal. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for features, you can drop us a line at publicradioeast.org.